patient and nurse to care for you.
And that's it, labor news you can use. You can find our international features and daily newscasts at radiolabor.net. I'm Mark Boulanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about solidarity.
You're listening to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando, on CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal, or worldwide at ckut.ca.
Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Hundreds of demonstrators took to the streets of Elizabeth City, North Carolina, Monday for a fifth day to protest last week's police killing of Andrew Brown Jr., a 42-year-old Black father. On Monday, authorities allowed Brown's family and attorney to watch a 20-second video clip of the shooting. The family says it shows Andrew Brown was shot in the back of the head while his hands were on the steering wheel of a car. This is Brown family attorney Chantel Cherry Lassiter.
Andrew had his hands on his steering wheel. He was not reaching for anything. He wasn't touching anything. He wasn't throwing anything around. He had his hands firmly on the steering wheel. They run up to his vehicle shooting. He still stood there, sat there in his vehicle with his hands on the steering wheel while being shot at. Yeah. Now, keep in mind, this is 20 seconds. I have 3 pages of notes for 20 seconds. We watched this over and over and over to make sure we were clear at what was being going on and what was transpiring.
After headlines, we'll go to North Carolina to speak with North Carolina Reverend William Barber. The Justice Department has launched a probe into the Louisville, Kentucky Metropolitan Police Department over whether officers have a pattern or practice of using unreasonable force, including against peaceful protesters. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the civil investigation Monday.
It will determine whether LMPD engages in unconstitutional stops, searches, and seizures, as well as whether the department unlawfully executes search warrants on private homes.
The probe will also investigate the Louisville-Jefferson County Metropolitan Government. It comes 13 months after plainclothes officers serving a no-knock warrant busted through the door of Breonna Taylor's home in the middle of the night and shot her dead. She was a Black 26-year-old emergency medical technician and aspiring nurse. Former officer Brett Hankison was indicted on charges of wanton endangerment for shooting into the apartment of a neighbor, but no one's been criminally charged over Breonna Taylor's killing. The COVID-19 pandemic has reached a new record high, with the number of daily global infections now averaging more than 820,000, led by a massive outbreak in India. The WHO says the pandemic is still in its acute phase, with a ninth straight week of rising infections. Almost 5.7 million cases were reported last week alone, which the World Health Organization says is certain to be an underestimate. This is the WHO's Director General, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus.
Many countries are still experiencing intense transmission, and the situation in India is beyond heartbreaking.
On Monday, President Joe Biden spoke by phone with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, promising to send aid, including vaccination supplies, therapeutic drugs, and desperately needed oxygen. This comes after India's government ordered Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to censor about 100 social media posts criticizing Prime Minister Modi's disastrous handling of the pandemic. The Biden administration said Monday it would share up to 60 million doses of the U.S.-manufactured AstraZeneca vaccine with other nations. That's enough for 30 million people, about 0.4% of the world's population. The AstraZeneca vaccine is not approved for use in the United States. President Biden is signing an executive order today establishing a $15 an hour minimum wage for federal contractors. Biden will also eliminate a lower tipped minimum wage for certain federal contractors who receive tips. Meanwhile, the White House is preparing to propose an increase in the capital gains tax to help pay for his upcoming American Families Plan. The proposal calls for increased federal spending on child care, pre-K, paid family leave, and tuition-free community college. College. Brian Deese, director of the National Economic Council, said the capital gains tax increase will target only the very wealthiest Americans.
This change will only apply to 0.3% of taxpayers, which is not the top 1%. It's not even the top 0.5%. We're talking about 0.3%. That's about 500,000 households in the country that we're talking about.
On Wednesday, President Biden will speak to a joint session of Congress for the first time, a ceremony that was delayed from February due to the coronavirus pandemic. The Supreme Court said Monday it'll hear a case on whether New York's restrictions on concealed carry firearms licenses violate the Second Amendment. The National Rifle Association backed the challenge. Justices will hear oral arguments this fall, with a decision expected sometime next year. The Supreme Court has also agreed to hear a case brought by a Guantanamo Bay prisoner who was tortured in U.S. custody. Abu Zubaydah and his lawyer want to subpoena former CIA contractors James Mitchell and Bruce Jessen about their role in developing torture tactics employed at a secret CIA black site in Poland, where Zubaydah was imprisoned. The U.S. Census Bureau has released the results of its 2020 census, showing the U.S. population grew at its slowest pace since the 30s. The results will reshape political power in the House of Representatives, where Texas will gain 2 seats. Meanwhile, North Carolina, Florida, Colorado, Oregon, and Montana will each gain 1 congressional seat. New York's congressional delegation will shrink by 1 member after coming up short by a mere 89 people. Also losing a House seat are Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio, Michigan, Illinois, and California. Florida voting rights advocates are sounding the alarm over new legislation that would make it harder to vote by mail, among other restrictions critics are condemning as Jim Crow 2.0. The bill, approved by Florida's state Senate Monday, would also limit ballot drop boxes, impose more identification requirements for absentee ballots, and criminalize giving food and water to voters waiting in line. The legislation is similar to a recent sweeping voter suppression law enacted in Georgia. In Arizona, Republican officials are continuing to challenge the result of the presidential election and have hired the Florida-based company Cyber Ninjas to assist in the audit of millions of ballots in Maricopa County, Arizona's most populous region. Cyber Ninja is run by a man who's widely shared conspiracy theories that claim the 2020 election was illegitimate. The audit was approved by the Arizona State Senate, which used its subpoena power to take possession of 2.1 million ballots, ballot counting machines, and computer hard drives. Former President Trump praised Arizona Republicans in a statement and said, quote, "I predict the results will be startling." Arizona's Democratic Secretary of State called the efforts a farce, as election officials warn the move will severely damage people's faith in the democratic process. California Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom could face a special recall election after a Republican-led effort gained enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. If the recall petition is certified, voters will decide by the end of the year whether to remove Newsom from office. Newsom's advisors predicted he would beat back the recall, calling it the work of pro-Trump, anti-mask, anti-vaccine extremists, they said. Oklahoma's Republican Governor Kevin Stitt has signed several bills that would make abortions almost completely illegal statewide. One bill would revoke the medical license of any Oklahoma doctor who performs an abortion except in very rare circumstances. Another bill bans abortions around 6 weeks of pregnancy. And a third requires doctors who perform abortions be board certified in obstetrics and gynecology. The legislation will face immediate legal challenges. Israel's security cabinet has approved a major military escalation in the Gaza Strip if Palestinian fighters don't stop firing rockets into southern Israel. Israel also moved Monday to completely cut off Palestinians' access to a fishing zone off the coast of the Gaza Strip. This comes as Human Rights Watch said for the first time Israel's committing the crimes of apartheid and persecution in the occupied Palestinian territories. In a report and accompanying video released today, Human Rights Watch said Israeli authorities have dispossessed, confined, forcibly separated, and subjugated Palestinians by virtue of their identity.
Israeli authorities maintain a two-tier system which privileges Jewish Israelis over Palestinians. The means used by Israeli authorities in the occupied territory amount to the systematic oppression needed to establish the crime of apartheid. Israeli authorities have committed a range of abuses against Palestinians. In the occupied territory, those abuses include mass land confiscation, the denial of residency rights, and the suspension of civil rights, and rise to the threshold of inhumane acts and severe abuses of the fundamental rights of Palestinians.
The U.S. government has agreed to train Guatemalan border agents as part of the Biden administration's efforts to further militarize Central American borders, make it more difficult for asylum seekers to reach the U.S.-Mexico border. The U.S. will reportedly send over a dozen Homeland Security agents to Guatemala. This isn't the first time U.S. authorities have been deployed to Guatemala to train local law enforcement. The offer came during a virtual meeting between Vice President Kamala Harris and the Guatemalan President Alejandro Giammattei.
And we want to work with you to address both the acute causes as well as the root causes in a way that will bring hope to the people of Guatemala that there will be an opportunity for them if they stay at home.
Central American and immigrant justice advocates have widely condemned more U.S. intervention in the region, saying U.S. foreign policies have exacerbated poverty, violence, and other root causes of why people have to flee in the first place. In Tijuana, Mexico, asylum seekers led a protest over the weekend demanding they be allowed to enter the United States and seek refuge. Dozens of people peacefully marched to the San Ysidro port of entry, while U.S. authorities responded by shutting down the border for hours and unleashing police and riot gear. Hundreds of asylum seekers have been stuck in Tijuana, living in a makeshift border camp since February. This is an asylum seeker from Honduras addressing President Biden.
We want them to answer us, to listen to us for 5 minutes, have compassion. There are children here, and he, Joe Biden, was also a child. Let them see that we suffer. He has not suffered, but we have. We were not born rich. We were born in poverty. We are poor, hardworking, and honest. We want them to listen to us and open the door for us.
And in Lavaca Bay, Texas, for 72-year-old environmental activist and author Diane Wilson is entering her 21st day on hunger strike today, demanding the Biden administration stop the dredging of the Matagorda Ship Channel and the construction of a new crude oil export terminal proposed by oil company Max Midstream. Wilson says she fears the dredging could release mercury contamination, devastating fisheries and local communities. Last weekend, over a dozen activists and kayaks joined Wilson for a protest against the proposed oil project. Wilson is a fourth-generation fisherwoman from the Texas Gulf Coast. In 2019, she won a $50 million lawsuit against plastic giant Formosa, the largest settlement of its type in U.S. history. Nearly half the funds have already been used to create a sustainable fishery cooperative and cleanup efforts in the region. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. When we come back, we'll talk to the Reverend William Barber about last week's police killing of Andrew Brown in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Stay with us. Team by Emdo Mokhtar. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York City, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
CKUT is hiring a spoken word coordinator. Do you have a passion for storytelling and amplifying perspectives outside of the mainstream media landscape? Are you interested in working at a collectively run, independent community radio station? CKUT's Spoken Word Coordinator is a full-time position starting June 1st that is responsible for the coordination of all CKUT's spoken word programming and is part of CKUT's Collective Management Committee. The position is 35 hours a week, pays $18.36 an hour, and applications will be accepted until 9 a.m. on May 3rd, 2021. Please visit ckut.ca for more details. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to CKUT. It's time for a little weather. Wednesday will be cloudy with sunny breaks and a high of 15 degrees Celsius. Thursday will be a mix of sun and clouds with a high of 15 degrees Celsius. Friday there will be rain and a high of 12 degrees Celsius. Saturday will have a mix of sun and clouds and a high of 11 degrees Celsius. Sunday will be cloudy with sunny breaks and a high of 13 degrees Celsius. Monday will be mainly sunny with a high of 16 degrees Celsius. Tuesday will be mainly sunny with a high of 17 degrees Celsius. Well, that wraps up the show. Keep listening to CKUT.
Midwest from Tennessee. Country built on running railroad tracks. Next stop is the Lone Star State. Finally know why they call it by that name. Cause I traded all the hearts for the riches and the fame. But what is thy pearl to an ocean cast away? We sing, what is thy pearl to an ocean cast away?
Twisted words, what's underneath? Dream on, Sally, dream on. Out of breath, a time of day, the running up the highlights of yesterday's. Dream on, Sally, dream on. Will one of these days, when the dreams are real, will you be satisfied with how you feel? Dream on, Sally, dream on. Dream on, Sally, dream on. Thoughts inside, people like to see you quiet with a smile. Dream on, Sally, dream on. And leaves are falling up to your nose. Got to keep on dreaming till the wind starts to blow. Dream on, Sally, dream on. Fremont. Will one of these days when the dreams are real, will you be satisfied with how you feel? Dream on, Sally.
The alert level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
So this is round two, as we would look at it in India right now.
The private hospitals are completely full to the brim.
We are running out of beds. We are running out of ventilators.
Right now, with the second wave or the second tsunami wave that we were facing, saturation levels of oxygen.
It is mayhem at this point.
A devastating second wave of COVID-19 is overwhelming India's healthcare sector. And nearly all of the dozen doctors we spoke to warn it's on the brink of collapse. Almost every day, the number of new cases rises to an unprecedented point. Hundreds of patients were recently put at risk when hospitals started running out of oxygen tanks. And the country, which prides itself as the pharmacy of the world, does not have nearly enough COVID medication to go around. Today, we take stock of how India's doctors and patients are surviving this brutal health crisis, and what comes next. I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. For doctors, grief is a familiar feeling. They encounter death on the daily. But the scale of death surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic has floored even physicians.
It feels like being trapped, an oppressive environment, for lack of a better word.
Shraddha Subramanian is a resident at a hospital in the city of Pune, in the hardest hit state in India right now.
Almost daily, I walk past the emergency room of our state-run hospital that is flooded with patients looking for a bed, patients sharing an oxygen cylinder while the country faces a crunch.
She was one of several doctors who shared their fears with us. Ravindra Mehta, in the southern city of Bangalore, was another. He's the chief of critical care at one of the hospitals there.
Currently, we are chock-block out of beds. This situation, I think I can say with confidence, is through all the country and all the metros. To give an example, the hospital opened up 50 beds. They filled up in 1.5 hours flat.
We also heard from Ankita Singh, a doctor in the northern state of Haryana. She said India's facing shortages not just of tools and appliances, but also of personnel.
The doctor-to-patient ratio here is approximately 1.3 doctors for 1,000 people. These are the stats from 2017. The latest reports say that the ratio now has decreased even more, and it's less than one doctor for 1,000 people. Just by looking at the ratio, we can actually make out how exhausted the doctors here must be.
And all of the doctors stress the ubiquity of this second wave. Here's Anuj Tiwari, who works at a public hospital in Mumbai.
The past 2-3 weeks have been absolute madness, to say the least. And the worst part of all, even the young ones are getting involved. Even patients who are in their 20s, 30s are requiring O2. And it's been crazy, like social media friends, acquaintances are getting in touch to get a bed, and all I can do is just tell them politely, sorry, no, I cannot help you. The feeling of helplessness is profound, and I don't know what to say. It has been absolutely crazy. Like, this is something we have never seen in life. First wave was absolutely nothing in front of this.
It's notable that those doctors you just heard from are all over the country, north, south, east, and west. We're also hearing from patients and their family members, too.
Hi, my name is Tanmay Goyal, and my entire family has been found COVID positive. The day my father was found positive, I was roaming around the city, and it was really tough to find even a single packet of Fabiflu.
Fabiflu is an antiviral medication approved in India to treat COVID-19. Tanmay eventually found some for his family through a tweet, but then more pressing needs emerged.
My father's oxygen level dipped below 90, so it was a panicky situation. And because I knew that by the time the doctor will decide whether he needs to be hospitalized or not, I'll have to put every efforts to just find a bed and in case the oxygen cylinder is required. So I had the responsibility of managing it before the doctor decides that my father needs to be hospitalized.
Tanmay has had friends post his father's name, age, health status, and phone number publicly on Twitter to try and find help. And he's not the only one. If you look on Twitter, you'll easily find hundreds of parents, colleagues, friends, and children pleading for assistance. They're searching for hospital beds, for ventilators, for oxygen, plasma, and medicines. Many of them are posting their phone numbers, hoping someone will call with answers. There was one case where a 65-year-old journalist in the northern city of Lucknow live-tweeted his depleting oxygen levels. He begged for someone to come help him, and he died before anyone did. Watching all of this fear and desperation unfold on social media, we wanted to know how India got to this point and what was being done about it. So we called on Dr. Giridhar Babu. He's a professor of epidemiology who also works with the Public Health Foundation of India. The day we talked to him, it was 7 p.m. in Bangalore, where he lives, and he just left a pretty high-profile call.
So I'm just coming out of a meeting chaired by the chief minister of the state, Karnataka, along with all the heads of the political parties. This year has been a lot of unexpected events happening, and the surge is completely uncontrolled. So that's why probably for the first time, the governor of the state of Karnataka had called in a meeting with all the political parties to address the corona situation.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, you are a public health expert, and we're talking to you at a time when Mumbai and Delhi have both imposed strict regulations and lockdowns, when the UK has redlisted or blocked from travel many travelers from India because of the pandemic. So what's the sense in the public health community right now in India? Are people more scared than they were?
I think the virus surprised everyone, including public health community. The surge of cases that's happening in the country is unprecedented compared to the last year. Whatever the peak we had for the first wave, we saw that peak very early on in the second wave. Some of the state governments in the country took extraordinary steps in preparing, but their comparison was mostly to the first wave. So they had multiplied their capacity twice as that of what they handled in first wave. But now they're seeing cases nearly five times or six times more than what they had prepared.
In January, Prime Minister Narendra Modi declared victory over the virus.
Everyone in India fought in this battle against the coronavirus. Today, India is one country that has been successful in saving the lives of more and more of its citizens, and where today the number of people infected with corona is decreasing rapidly.
Do you remember that? Were you feeling hopeful when that happened?
I think as a system, as the entire country, we probably got into this jubilant mood much sooner than the virus had its own plans. Starting from the end of last year till almost beginning of February, almost everything opened up. The elections were announced, the religious congregation started, cinemas were running full house, schools and colleges were started. There were crowds everywhere. And as you are aware, crowds are perfect super spreading events. So we created this conducive atmosphere for faster transmission while the virus was undergoing its own changes. It had its own plans. So it's not just one. Now there are around three variants which are imported, and there are some homegrown variants. Together, we have multiple variants creating havoc in the country.
What about
as one of those variants that you mentioned, this double mutant one that seems to have popped up. How much of it is to blame for this spike?
The honest answer for that question is we simply don't know. This is a net effect of so many factors. Now we are running out of options. We don't know what to do. So each state is doing its own thing because we have to somehow prevent as many deaths as possible.
How do you see the pandemic changing India's healthcare system in the long term?
I have two perspectives, one aspirational and what can really happen. An aspirational aspect is I would want the policymakers, politicians to recognize the importance of how strong should be the public health system. If we do not recognize this as an opportunity to improve public health system, I think we have to face many more pandemics in future. So that's aspirational. But generally, in most countries, what would happen is there is a crisis. You respond it in a very reactive way. And once it is over, you forget about the entire thing. The reason this happens is this is the same human psychological response of how to ensure preventing fire. Every time there is fire, people do talk about how to prevent it. They give accolades to the firefighters, but nobody thinks either about the fire or the firefighters afterwards. That may be a sad reality.
It is so true. And you're right. And it happens all over the world. But before we get to that possible sad reality, a huge concern globally right now is vaccination. India is the world's largest vaccine manufacturer generally, but now it can't keep up with the COVID-19 demand and is importing because of the dire need. I asked Dr. Babu how the rollout is going.
I think India's vaccination efforts, again, were probably slower because we thought we did reasonably well, much earlier than what we should have. But now it has got onto pace.
The Modi government's vaccine rollout has picked up pace, but also controversy. People over the age of 45 will get the shot for free at public sites, but the federal government is leaving it to states to decide how to vaccinate young adults. For many, the only option will be going to private clinics and paying for the jab. And that has people worried that only the rich will get vaccinated. India is one of the only places in the world letting vaccines sell on the open market like this. And it's unclear if and how that policy will change as the rollout continues. Is there an end in sight for this pandemic in India?
If there is an end in sight for this pandemic anywhere in the world, then there will be in India as well. The reason I say that is, as an epidemiologist, when you look at the way the virus is evolving, the way it has thrown so many surprises, I don't think this virus is going to disappear one day. It will probably become endemic. The real challenge here is to not allow high transmission in any part of the world. So I think we can't do this piecemeal. And this is where the role of World Health Organization is very critical in taking the leadership and then in ensuring that all the countries are working as partners and friends.
Mm-hmm. So how are you doing? How are you feeling knowing you have that extra level of insight into this as an epidemiologist, but also just as an Indian citizen who has family and who lives there? What has this been like for you?
The last 1 year has been completely life-changing. I have gone through all sorts of intellectual challenges of trying to bring the world-class implementation science into practice. But then there are times where you emotionally are completely drained, and to the extent that you break down, you go through the depression, and at times you feel like nothing can change and then you want to give up, but then you think it's simply not the right thing to do. So you again get up and with the new energy start working, thinking that it will make some changes. It has been a year of mixed reactions, but I don't think I would have learned this in any school or any textbook. This experience is real. I hope I don't have to use this again because I don't want another pandemic or another wave afflicting human beings. But are we prepared to change as a global community? Are we prepared to learn from each other, collaborate with each other? I am an eternal optimist. Despite of all the challenges, probably I'll continue as long as I can as a public health person.
That was beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Dr. Babu, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, especially when I know it is such a busy time for you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Malika. It's a pleasure talking to you.
So much of this story is heartbreaking and heavy, but hope is an important part of it as well. The calls and social media requests are out of desperation, but also a belief that someone out there can help. And Dr. Shraddha Subramanian, who we heard at the top of the episode, ended her messages to us with her own thoughts about where she finds hope.
On terrifying days when I hear epidemiologists say that this will go on for another 2 or 3 years at best, I think of my patient Suruli, a migrant laborer. He spoke only Tamil, one of the thousands of languages spoken in India, but not in this city. As chance would have it though, I can speak Tamil too. Suruli had no idea why he'd been admitted or what was wrong with him and was afraid of losing his job. In my time there, I spoke to his employer and could help him secure a place to go to after his discharge. Simple things, really, but an opportunity to make another human being feel slightly less alone, and that's how I convince myself that there is some hope.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Priyanka Tilvey, with Dina Kispe, Nagin Oliai, Ney Alvarez, Amy Walters, Alexandra Locke, and me, Malika Bilal. Tom Finton is our story editor. Alex Roldan is our sound designer. Steve Lack mixed and edited this episode. And Stacey Samuel is the executive producer. We'd like to thank all of the doctors and patients who sent in their stories during such a hectic and frightening time. Special thanks also to Girish Burde, Jayendra Burde, and Ashish Malhotra. We'll be back.
CQT would like to thank our community sponsors, without whom our 2021 funding drive would not have been as successful. Lola Rosa, La Banquise, Tejano, Lufa Farms, Ovive, Fin du Vinyl, Constellation Records, Drawn and Quarterly, Paragraph Books, Curse Blebedeb Left Wing Books, Adrenaline Tattoo. Make sure to pay your funding drive pledge before May 1st, 2021 to be entered into our prize draw. For details on prizes, go to ckut.ca.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is now underway for priority groups. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The 37th Festival International de Musique Actuelle de Victoriaville, a must for safe live arts, May 17th to 23rd, 2021. Concerts, sound art installations in public spaces, experimental short films, and visual arts. For a safe event of living arts, let's meet in Victo, May 17th to 23rd. Details and tickets for the 37th FIMAV at www.fimav.qc.ca. That's www.fimav.qc.ca.
life. The owl whose night-bound eyes are blind unto the day cannot unveil the mystery of light. If you would indeed behold the spirit of death, open your heart wide unto the body of life. For life and death are one, even as the river and the sea are one. Your hopes and desires lies your silent knowledge of the beyond, and like seeds dreaming beneath the snow, your heart dreams of strength. Trust the dreams, for in them is hidden the gate to eternity.
In your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT is hiring a spoken word coordinator. Do you have a passion for storytelling and amplifying perspectives outside of the mainstream media landscape? Are you interested in working at a collectively run, independent community radio station? CKUT's spoken word coordinator is a full-time position starting June 1st that is responsible for the coordination of all CKUT's spoken word programming and is part of CKUT's Collective Management Committee. The position is 35 hours a week, pays $18.36 an hour, and applications will be accepted until 9 a.m. on May 3rd, 2021. Please visit ckut.ca for more details. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
The 37th Festival International de Musique Actuelle de Victoriaville, a must for safe live arts, May 17th to 23rd. Concerts, sound art installations in public spaces, experimental short films, and visual arts. For a safe event of living arts, let's meet in Victo this May. Details and tickets for the 37th